Well, we're doing episode 061, Business Broken to Smoking Podcast. We got Brandon Kenny from TTX, and you and I have been doing this business stuff for a while, and I love having you here to talk about what you do, how you think, what you see, how you lead, and it's a real pleasure and privilege, actually, to have clients like you, to have friends like you, and to see you just crushing it with this business. I brag about you and your business to some of my other clients. Sometimes I beat up my other clients and say, why can't you just be like Brandon? You know, so thanks for being here, buddy. And we're going to talk about interviewing. We're going to talk about hiring. We're going to talk about how you figure out that you've got a good person sitting in front of you in a recruiting, onboarding, hiring kind of process. And I want to just kind of pick your brain a little bit for the sake of our listeners. And hopefully some business owner out there is listening to this and goes, what the? You know, like, I've been doing it wrong, you know? So anyway, that's our goal. So give us, first of all, give us like a $5 tour, if you will, of TTX and kind of just set the stage for the business.
Sure. So well, hey, it's a privilege to be here, Mark. I'm honored to be on the pod and love spending time with you and feel honored to be asked. We've certainly made our share of mistakes. I've been running this business for roughly 15 years, but it's a second generation family business that my dad started, and I came into it this year will be 20 years, actually, in September that I've been in the business. And we operate in Northern Ohio. We have about 40 employees. We do IT services, IT project work, the kind of whole range of voice, IT project, and kind of everything that goes on with technology. We're primarily a professional services firm, so we implement that, support it, take care of it, and work primarily in this market, but we've got clients all over the country and all over the world. We're based in Strongsville, which is close to the Cleveland Airport. And so I bought myself and my partner, we bought the business from our parents. He had been in it longer than I had been. Traditionally, we were in the voice space, so all the voice technology coming out of the 80s and 90s and transition into IT. And he and I did that together. And the reason that we're standing here in good shape is, one, I'm very grateful to have him as a partner. He and I get along better than our dads ever did, which is something to be very fortunate for. And he and I can run the business, you know, shoulder to shoulder and also back to back. So we really trust each other. And also you, Mark, you've been a wonderful coach, and I've learned a lot. And navigating the small business, family business landscape is tricky. Getting all that right. And, you know, I feel humbled to be asked my opinion on this topic, because we certainly have made our mistakes, but we've learned some lessons, and a lot of the lessons we've learned, I've learned from working with you and the coaching relationship, and also just learning by doing out there. You know, I think most of the mistakes we've made, I've been responsible for hiring and firing in the business as the CEO at the top level, and then also working with our top managers to navigate those things. They're always the hardest things when you're in a people business. The hiring is exciting and the firing is very saddening, and there's a lot of in between to try and get right. And like most things, getting it right starts at the beginning. So it's appropriate to talk about interviewing, but that's a nutshell.
Yeah,
on the business.
Well, you talked me into becoming a business coach. I tell, you know, when somebody says, "Now, why should we hire you? And how'd you get started in this? And what's your degree?" or something like that, I'm like, no. Like, that's not how this goes. You know, it's there's this guy Brandon who talked me into it, and it took him about a year, and I finally fell for it. And you know, and then it took me a couple of years to figure out what the heck a business coach was. And you've been been a big part of that all along the way. You've been the reason, actually, initially. So
hey, thanks.
It's a lot
coach
of fun.
Coach is coach.
Yeah. And
you've been doing that with me before you were one formerly, yeah. And you're doing it great now. So.
And we like to joke, you and I, it's good work if you can get it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's to having a great gig,
yep.
Right on both sides. So, and that's really, business is this unique opportunity to build a team of folks that we care about, that we can perform well with, that we can go home with the satisfaction of knowing that we have some great folks that we work alongside. We can build a culture, build a chemistry, a high performing team. And who wants to be losers? You know,
yeah.
I mean, who wants to have sucky teams or yes. sucky coworkers or kind of just do okay when mm-hmm. we do the thing that we do while the earth is spinning around the sun? You know, we got to have something meaningful and something rich and rewarding to do. And there's something really cool or really satisfying about building a business. And it's not just money. Money's important. Mm. Money's a thing, but it's not a good driver. It's not a good why.
Yeah.
But people are, you know, people are a good why.
I think so.
And you're good at reminding folks of that. I see that with your team and with the folks that are working there, from what I can tell, are working there because they want to work for you. You know, you embody a culture, or you embody an esprit de corps that people want to be a part of. And I think that's an important part of hiring, is to have the key person that embodies that in the room. Right. And to be able to say, hey, listen, candidate, you might have the chance of working with me, right? Or you might have the chance of being part of this really cool team, and we're going to run you through the ringer to make sure you don't dilute our culture,
mm-hmm.
A, and B, we want you to see our culture and see what it is.
Yeah.
And then see, we want you to like buy into it and value add to it, and not just enjoy it, but bring something that'll make it even better, bring your kind of unique chemistry to it. And a lot of times folks just forget that in the interviewing process. You know, they're just thinking about, mm-hmm. Hey, we got this opening. Hey, we got this client that needs this work done. Hey, we got this machine, there's an empty seat. Or the phone's ringing and nobody's answering it. Or we need somebody in the warehouse. Or, you know, it's very, I'm going to say tactical or transactional, right? It's just somebody needs to check the boxes. Somebody needs to open the door. Somebody needs to pump out product. Somebody needs to, you know, collect the money, you know, go to the bank, all that stuff. But that's secondary to the culture. So talk about when did you kind of shift? Well, was it a shift? First of all, you've been in the business 20 years mm-hmm. and you kind of took over, kind of grabbed the steering wheel, so to speak, in what, 2010, 11, 12?
2008, 2009, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah, it was right about when Scott and I took over running the business formally in 2009.
And when you did that, what was your opinion about hiring? Like, how did you look at interviewing, hiring, onboarding, recruiting? What was your...
Well, I think we were stuck in the kind of cycle that most businesses get stuck in, and that we, you know, figured out relatively late in life, is that hiring is something that's necessary to do all the time. Keeping a good talent flow, knowing people in the marketplace. But when you're dealing with the tactical realities of a small business, it's one of the easiest things not to do, because it is definitely a proactive thing. You know, if you have 30 people that are working for you and they're all doing great, and you have capacity where you have the right amount of clients, the right amount of employees to do the work, you don't actually need to do it. You should be doing it, but it's not as necessary as, say, you know, escalating big issues or handling finance or, you know, the realities of the day-to-day, the email inbox. And it's one of those that I think is universally accepted by businesses, that you should consistently be in the marketplace. You never know who might be your next all-star. You never know who might be the next person on your team that's great, that's going to leave, a person that sours. And if you're not ready, if you don't have some sort of a bench or at least some sort of a pool that you're looking at, then it becomes an emergency then. And that is primarily the way that we were doing it then, was, you know, somebody leaves and then it's an immediate problem that gets solved tactically. So then you use the tactical tools to say, okay, you know, how much time do we have? We have 30 days, 60 days. We have client engagements. We need to get this done for, who do we know? And let's, what are the easy buttons in terms of postings? So, you know, getting on LinkedIn or, different sources like a job board. And, then really are entering a market on your back foot, because you're not talking about a position you may have or would like to have from a growth standpoint, or maybe, you know, just to find the next superstar, but you're talking about something that is actually a problem now, burning. Like, the situation is a problem. The fire is getting hotter. You're without a person. And, that creates an urgency that is very difficult to, make a good decision while you're dealing with that kind of immediacy urgency. You know, the rushed, forced decision leaves you with less of your other tools, you know, just being able to slow down. And I had an epiphany. So when I turned, this is maybe a long way around on the answer, but I turned 40 a couple years ago. About 6 months before I turned 40, I thought, you know, I'd like to be in a little bit better shape. I mean, 40 is kind of these, one of these milestone ages where you say, hey, you know, where was I at 40? And I had this realization, like, you know, the things that it takes to be in good shape are very well known. We've known those things for a long time. If we were to play a game and I were to say, you know, Mark, you tell me if this person is in good shape. And I just start giving you some things like, okay, this person gets 8 hours of sleep, 6 days a week. And they eat a light breakfast and a light lunch, and they eat a medium-sized dinner. They keep their calorie intake a certain place. They work out 5 times a week for 30 minutes. They take their vitamins. They eat some greens. They get an annual checkup. 9 times out of 10, you're going to say, yeah, that person's probably in pretty decent shape. Like, there's exceptions to the rule, but most of the time, we know what that's going to be. And I recognize at that time, like, hey, we know what these things are. Like, don't overthink this. Just commit to a regimen. And when it comes to interviewing, it's very commonsensical, because every good parent, mom and dad, gives this kind of advice to their child when they start to enter the dating world. Like, how do you find somebody that would be a good partner? And, you know, nobody suggests that you do it in a hurry. Nobody suggests that you do it the moment you need it. So, okay, you need a boyfriend or girlfriend? Okay, just go find one. And, you know, ask them a few questions. And, you know, it's not directly relatable, but the idea that, you know, a good parent would take their son or daughter through would be like, hey, you need to slow things down. You know, you need to be clear on what you're looking for. You need to make sure you have some fit, some cultural fit. Kind of mixing the two together, but you need to make sure that, you know, what's important to them long-term is important to you long-term. There needs to be some level of attraction. You know, you can't just rule out the fact that, you know, like, physically, what is it that you're interested in? There's all these kind of things that you would talk through. And when it comes to interviewing, if it's a response to, and I think this is where we were for many years, and back to the question, how was it when I started? It was very reactive. So, hey, we need a partner. We need somebody to fill this role. And that's a tough way to get into the market. Like, you're there's a lot of things that are going to happen probably the wrong way if that's the way you go about it. So,
yeah, always hiring. So that's one of the things I'm hearing from you, is that you shifted from hiring because you have a gap or an opening to hiring all the time, to recruiting, looking, interviewing,
yeah,
all the time, right? Or at least,
yep,
consistently. Do you, as a business, what's that? How do you invest in that? Like, what do you, yeah, you know, it's easy to say, kind of always be hiring, and you could go to Vistage or some business breakfast, and somebody gets up and talks, and they go, hey, you ought to always be hiring. And everybody in the crowd's like, yeah, amen, right? You know, yeah, got it. But what does that look like? How do you actually always, how are you always hiring?
Yeah.
practically?
Well, I'd say it goes back to the way you started. We're talking about people and that being something worth doing. And one of the job duties that I have that I communicate to everybody in the organization is one of my main responsibilities is to be the protector of culture. I own the culture at the business. So the buck stops here. And so what I'm doing with that is making sure the people that are inside our walls match up. And then when I'm talking to somebody that's outside our walls, I'm protecting those walls. So when somebody's inside, I'm making sure, hey, are we leveled up? I'm the first servant of our core values. So our core values are on the wall in our building. There, we talk about them in our hiring process. We don't talk about them from a marketing standpoint, like on our website, because we don't want to cheapen them. They're really not primarily for our clients. They're primarily for us internally. But we're always looking at those standards to say, are we all about the flag? Are we people focused? Are we doing the things associated with eyes wide open? The parlance that's associated with our group. And as much as I owe it to the organization to protect those things internally, I owe it to all those people externally when I'm meeting with somebody about it from an interviewing standpoint to be sure, to basically assume they probably won't fit. And that's what you would want for your son or daughter. You say, hey, if you have a high view of your child, you'd say, hey, most of the people in the world probably aren't a good fit for you. You're elite. So I'm gonna help you find somebody that's great. I do think that what we're trying to do culturally is special. So if I just went and found somebody that was a, 5 or 6 out of 10 on a culture fit standpoint, I've reduced our team's number. Average person's fit over the whole just went down, and I've introduced all kinds of risks. And everybody looks at me then as the one who's basically signing off on that ultimately and says, how is it that you've allowed our culture to erode or basically be challenged by this person? So we kind of start with the presumption that it's probably not a fit, which you cannot do if you're in a hurry to hire somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the biggest thing about cats. Like you said, it's very cliche to say always be interviewing, but if you're not investing in it, then you won't be able to do it the way you want to when it comes time. You'll have to make a hurried decision, and you will have some people that you won't have gotten the chance to meet with. So, because you'll be looking at top of the stack. The way that it goes in most businesses, and this is the way it was for us to start, you get 10 resumes, you get through that first initial stack of 10, however those first 10 get to you, whatever source, you find 2 or 3 in there that are your favorites. And then I know this because I've been on this side of the table. You got one you like. It just makes sense to you. So then you go into the interview and you make that person fit what you want, mm-hmm. instead of letting them be the person that they are.
Yeah.
Because we find the world we go looking for, right? So maybe you have a 30-minute phone screen and it's great. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the resume, you're like, job duties are good, whatever they would say about their personal life all fits. All right, this is probably going to be the guy that I hire. And somebody who's focused on getting things done is like, I need to get this done. This is a hireable person. This has to get done. A plus B equals C. And you're not looking for the reasons why it won't work, so you don't see them, right? You're just not seeing them because you're trying to prove that you can solve this problem with this person. Mm. And I'm speaking from experience. The reason I can get so clear on this is because I've done it. Mm. I've done this thing.
How many times do you think you've done that? How many times you sat there and hired or fell for or almost fell for the wrong person just because of that?
More than 10.
Yeah.
More than 10. I mean, I haven't done the math on how many people I've hired now that we have distributed management in the business with sales mm-hmm. and operations. I don't make the actual decision. I give my mm-hmm. my position, yeah. and usually we agree on those things because we're in lockstep about what's important. But yeah, I've made that mm-hmm. mistake more than 10. And I've seen managers make that mistake too, mm-hmm. because they're thinking about, hey, if we don't take care of this client, being a professional services, we've got a spot that's unfilled and a client needs work done. They're paying us monthly, or they've paid us for a project and we have a spot we need to fill. you know, you don't have time to mess around. You know, it's like, hey, we need to take care of the client. We've got a contract. They're paying us real money. This resume, it's a defendable decision. That would be something you could say, you know, resume, fit, interview, like, hey, anybody, a group of my peers would say I made a fair decision here, but we're trying to do better than that. You know, I mean, we're trying to say like, no. And I think, you know, that we were talking about this the other day, like when you drive around, like right now, everybody's trying to get people hired, and you drive around, you'll see signs on in a business's front yard that says, you know, workers wanted, you know, sign on bonuses. And going back to that analogy of your son or daughter, like that's the last way you want to approach finding somebody is like, I'm available, you know, right. like right. low price, you know, immediate need,
needy,
right? And I think the person, the winner that you want, I think whether consciously or subconsciously sees it that way is like, oh, something must be wrong there. Like you would say in a relationship, like if they... they're desperate, like so much so that they went to a print company and had a 20-foot sign made because they can't get somebody to come into their job either because of comp or because of culture or because of manager.
Yeah.
Then like, I mean, in the same way you'd say with a relationship, like you meet somebody at a bar and they come on like, I need somebody to date now. You'd be like, whoa, you know, probably the wrong person.
Yeah, that sounds like a Journey song right there. Smell a cheap perfume.
Yeah.
Right, whatever. Well, Dave Ramsey said something in an interview one time, and I'm not a huge fan of Dave Ramsey, but there's a couple things he said that I'm like, oh, that is pure gold. One of the things he said, and he was talking about from a money perspective, but this fits with a people hire perspective. He said, right after I do something desperate, I do something stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and he was just kind of like pondering.
Yep.
And the same thing here, right? If you put yourself in a desperate situation or you find yourself painted in a corner, then you only have a few options, you know? And so what I'm hearing you say is keep your options open. And if you have a good pipeline, quote, sales funnel of candidates, then you typically don't find yourself in that desperate situation. Yeah. That's one of the things I've encouraged my clients to think about with recruiting is to shift from client acquisition to staff acquisition, to especially at the senior level, to say, guys, we're in the business of finding great people, and they find great clients and they serve our clients, and that's the whole point of delegating and scaling is you shift from quote being the baseball player to quote owning the baseball team. And if you get out there on the field and play, you're going to lose at the pro level as an owner or as a leader. And so to strategically shift and with a set of processes to shift and with a set of deliverables to shift and say, hey, as an organization, we are in the people finding business.
Yeah.
So what does that look like for you maybe on a week in and week out basis? It's easy again to talk about it, but one of the things I've seen you do is put it into practice and create, I don't want to say like a rhythm around it, and you've staffed up around it.
Yeah.
We were talking just before we got on here about Jody. So talk about Jody for a minute and what his role is.
So Joshua is our VP of operations, and he's a close friend of mine and an absolutely 10 out of 10 culture advocate for TTX. And I couldn't ask for more in him and his partnership in running operations. And so all the engineering, project management, all the work that we do from an IT pro services flows through Joshua. And I met Jody through a business contact. He was working at another business similar to TTX, not in our market. It was a business peer. And Jody was on that team. And then that business changed and Jody was open and looking for an opportunity. And Joshua and I met with Jody. And I mean, that's one of the things too that I've learned over the years, you know, as a CEO, you can get running a little bit too fast for the organization. And I think it could have messed up if I was like this, I know this guy, Jody, I've worked with him at this other business. Let's find a place for him. Instead, I said, hey, Joshua, I don't know if there's a fit. Let's explore this together. And that's something that, you know, we both get on the bus at the same time so we can start to have this conversation.
And Jody would fit into Joshua's organization. Is that fair?
Previously, Jody was on the operations side of the business mm-hmm. that he was operating in before. Okay. So, you know, it was kind of the natural, like, hey, I think he was doing client success, customer mm-hmm. advocacy. The business was a little bit bigger than ours. So I think mm-hmm. he was kind of sitting in like, he was on a leadership team, sitting in a chief customer advocacy or mm-hmm. client satisfaction role. But as you know, as we've learned with Jody's one of those guys that's just a utility player, thrives in that kind of thing, mm-hmm. is awesome at it, you know, mm-hmm. not just because we need it, but because he likes doing that. And so anyways, Joshua and I explored the conversation, and we didn't have an immediate, like, we didn't have a seat on the bus defined where it was like, oh, here's the role that we had waiting, and Jody's the perfect fit, and let's plug Jody into that role. But he and I both, after talking to him a couple of times, are like, man, we want this guy on our team. I mean, we can't pass on this guy. Like, what could he do that we could justify from a financial standpoint to take this on from an OPEX standpoint? Because, I mean, that's what every small business is mm-hmm. struggling with. I mean, we'd all like mm-hmm. to hire every nice person we know, but there's financial realities to what we can afford. And, you know, Jody's an experienced worker who deserves to make higher level salaries. So we was like, how does this make sense? And so we start talking about, well, what else are we struggling with that we haven't necessarily defined a seat for? And the number one thing was hiring, talent acquisition and development. So it's not just finding people, but also onboarding them, following them along for a 90-day period, checking in with them after 6 months and a year to make sure that we've not only found somebody. So getting qualified candidate. I mean, the thing that I have learned is that hiring should be looked at very similar to the sales discipline in a business. So you could go to any bookstore or go online. There's going to be thousands of more books written about sales and sales strategy than there are about hiring and hiring yeah. strategy. Now yeah. that's catching up, like with culture and kind of the vibe, the zeitgeist of our time. There's a lot of stuff being said about culture, and I think that's changing. But like, certainly from the time that I grew up in the business and the 15 years I've been doing it, I'm aware of 10 sales strategies to implement with the sales yeah. team. I'm aware of all kinds of tools, you know,
yeah.
sales performance tracking, and every organization has a sales department. But, you know, hiring really is, instead of fishing for clients, you're fishing for people. And there's a whole similar science to that. Mm-hmm. Like, you need somebody who is compelling. You know, and so anyways, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. So Joshua and I said, hey, I think there's this role that we need, because we were playing that catch up game. We were not always hiring, and we had to kind of sell that internally, you know, with our leadership team, with Nate, who runs sales, with Scott, my partner and president, and say, hey, we think we need this spot. Because one of the other things that not having hiring as a focused position does is it forces you to keep people you'd like to change out. Mm. So you just feel a little hamstrung, like, yeah, that guy's a 7, and we've tried, like, we're trying, and we've seen some 8 and 9 out of him, you know? So we want to believe that it's okay, mm-hmm. because if he slips below that line, then we're going to have to replace him, and we're not ready to do that. Like, yeah. I don't have candidate 1 ready. So that was part of what Joshua and I were struggling with, is like, not only do we have growth roles, but we also have some people that we'd like to talk to mm-hmm. and say, like, hey, is that guy sitting in somebody else's seat? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe right. you're sitting in another guy's seat,
right.
but we don't have time to go find that guy. Certainly there's a guy out there. So we sold that internally, and we brought Jody on as our talent acquisition development manager. So Jody's role primarily is to find candidates for TTX, not sales or operations or project mm-hmm. management or finance, but to find people that are good TTX fits. Mm-hmm. And then
at all the disciplines,
just be out there in the market mm-hmm. talking to people. And I would say that the way that Jody functions looks a lot more like a salesperson mm-hmm. than it looks like an HR department or an HR, you know, a person who would be posting. Not that there's anything wrong with what an HR department does, is absolutely a necessary function. And mm-hmm. I mean, that can be crippling if you're not getting the HR side right. But finding people is a lot more like finding clients.
Yeah.
You know, so going back to that thing of like hanging up a 10x10 sign in your front yard, like, can you imagine if a business did that for clients?
Right.
Like, right. Hey, we need clients.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, sign on a bonus. We're desperate for clients. Yeah. Like, people are like, okay, something's obviously wrong with the, you know, the restaurant if the sign out front is we're giving away meals.
Yeah. If you cook them.
Yeah. <right? laughs> So.
Yeah, dude, when I walk into a restaurant and it says hiring managers, wait staff, you know, bus staff, you know, chef, cooks, whatever. You're just like, who's working back there?
Yeah.
Like they must have gotten this just the dregs of society back there schlepping this food out. I'm like, I don't think I want to eat here.
You know? One of the things that, so another picture of what Jody's doing, Jody, I call Jody head coach a lot. He's got this, he knows how to sit in a room and be a coach. He's a big sports guy and he's from Kentucky. He's a big Kentucky basketball fan. And so when you see these, we've seen movies or you see screenshots of what a head coach does to recruit a player, especially now as it's so much more player driven, you see the head coach, you know, sitting in the family room, you know, talking to the family, like, hey, here's what's special about our school. Hmm. Like, here's how we're going to treat your son or daughter. And so the whole family starts to buy in on the story. And then at some point, what happens, and I've seen this happen with our people as a result of the way that Jody's doing this work, our candidates, they come in for a third interview and that's sitting with me and the manager and Jody. It feels a lot like you would, let's say a player sold on going to Kentucky and then Kentucky's not sure they have a spot for him. They're like, please, you know, I want to play at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where my, like, can I get into Kentucky? Like, I'll do anything. Like, I want to get in. Mm-hmm. What I see from people right now, when they get to the third or fourth round interview with, which is when I get involved, I'm not involved in any of those earlier interviews. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of at that last point where, like, Jody and whoever the manager is, whether it's sales or operations, says this person's hireable. They've done a skills interview, they've done a cultural interview just around core values. And they say, hey, this is hireable, but like, we want to see, let's give this some more space. You know, no offer's been made.
And this is when you sit down with them, this is, you think, like third maybe interview,
third or fourth, just depending upon timing of a phone interview separate. We always start with core values. Mm. So, you know, like there's, I think in analogies all the time, but you know, it's this idea of, hey, Jody meets with a candidate, somebody who's come to us for some reason. The first meeting we have is only core values. And it feels a little bit like, you know, somebody who's out there in the dating world looking for the right person and intentionally playing it slower than the other person would like to play it. I mean, that's attractive, you know? So if one person's like, hey, I'm feeling great. Like maybe they're looking for a kiss on the doorstep and you're like, no, we're good. Like, well, I'll call you, you know, I'll call you in 4 days.
Shake hands, right?
Yep. You know, I had a really nice time. You know, you say, we had a really nice time together. I think this might be going places.
Yeah.
Let's talk in a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that for somebody who's significantly attracted to somebody and willing to go faster is very attractive, even more so to say, oh, not only is this person very attractive, they're also willing to be intentional and slow down and not just speed through the steps. So the way that that first core value interview goes is just all about, tell me about your life. Tell me about who you are. What's important to you? Here's our core values. What do you think about those? How do they resonate for you? What do you want to know about us? And then that's, you know, could be 2-3, depending upon that person's interest in having that kind of conversation, that could go on for 2-3 hours. And
this is like primarily a phone interview, that first one?
It'd be in video.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'd be definitely, it would not be just audio. It would be, you know, two people looking at each other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're in person, but
how often are they in person? Well, maybe the first one's not, but.
Yeah, I would say probably 25%. Mm-hmm. In person and 75% virtual, just given the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Do you shift to in person pretty quick?
The last couple. So the skills. So usually what we'll do is bring somebody in from our team who's serving in a similar role.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Into a skills discussion. Mm-hmm. So like we're away from a little bit away from core values. We're still marinating in the core value kind of sense, but it's more about like, tell me about what you're doing now. Like, what's expected you from a daily duty standpoint and what experience you have, asking some more pointed questions like, so if this situation happened, how would you handle it? So that we have somebody inside the walls that can speak with Jody about like, here's what I think about that person that we just spoke to. So you've got kind of an ally to, and another set of eyes, you know, just another set of eyes to say, you know, I didn't like the way you answered that question. Mm-hmm. And also, we're hiring technical people. So sometimes, like, Jody's non-technical, I'm non-technical. Sometimes you need a technical person to sniff out if that person's bluffing, mm-hmm. playing a game, like, yeah. just technical enough.
Yeah.
So you need somebody who can say, like, yeah, I give my check mark. Like, I think this person knows yeah. what they're talking about.
But that's skills, right? I mean, that's technical yep. ability to do the job. And you've got to have, I'm assuming that you're interviewing people that at least appear that they may be able to do the job, yeah. you know, from yes. from a...
For us, I mean, so like I said at the beginning, I mean, we're a professional services organization. Mm-hmm. So what we do first is about how we do it, not necessarily what we do. So I find that culture, core values, communication, responsiveness, stick-to-itiveness, discipline, those things come before skills. We're generalists in the IT space, so we can teach that stuff. So a person's experience with TTX has a lot to do, more to do with the way they're treated than the ones and zeros and the hardware and the software. Now, that's true for us. I mean, that's not true for, like, if you're Elon Musk and you're trying to go to Mars or... You know, you're trying to build a electric car. Like, you need innovators. You need people who are first, like, mm-hmm. brilliant. You need in some roles. Mm-hmm. But for us, like, I know what we do, which is we serve people. So the important things in how we serve have to do with culture. Like, yeah. what kind of person are you? How do you go about it? How do you communicate? And the skills, there's a requisite set of skills, but they're not the primary hiring force.
You know,
I've made that mistake.
Yeah.
Hired somebody based on a resume and skills. Like, yeah. oh man, this guy's working on this stuff today. Bring him in.
Yeah.
And then it's just, this is not the kind of organization this person wants to be in.
Yeah.
Or the person that fits for us.
Yeah. So you came across Jody, you and Josh, kind of stumbled across Jody. And from a CEO's, this is a kind of a good CEO catch right here.
Yeah.
And I think you're good at this. And I try to get other CEOs to get good at this, but to be constantly out in the, I'm going to say marketplace,
yeah.
you know, where these folks are residing, you know, and to always be kind of fishing for those future hires. And there's a great book that points at this. I don't know if you've read this book. I don't know if we've talked about it, but it's Who by... Jeff Smart, and he makes the case that a key leader, especially the C-suite, one of their primary roles or foundational roles is to be attracting future talent to the organization and to create actually a metric or an OKR or a, yeah. you know, some sort of, you know, big giant number like, hey, you got to attract at least 5 people a year that are going to sit down and talk with us about yeah. being a part here. In big nonprofits, if you want to sit on the board of a nonprofit, that's typically, at least the healthy ones, have this expectation of their board members or, hey, you need to be bringing us some opportunities, whether it's yeah. donors or talent or, intellectual kind of prowess, you know, from out in the marketplace. And as a leadership team, that's a big deal. And I think you're naturally naturally paying attention to that. But do you intentionally do that? Do you have a way that you kind of say, it's Tuesday, I need to get out in the marketplace? Or do you have like an overt way of doing that?
I'm getting better at that. I have an overt way of using my calendar for that. Mm. So I color code that my calendar based upon things that are external to TTX or internal to TTX. So we have, and I'm always, as the CEO, I'm always trying to keep those things in tension, you know, in a good tension, healthy tension of, you know, I need to be present. I need people to feel the, you know, the love from me that, you know, this is our tribe. Mm-hmm. You know, in a sense, you know, I'm the dad in the business. So need to be present. Like, there's quality time, but there's also quantity of time. Quantity is important too. You know, I mean, it's not just quality time. Quantity also matters. And so I like serving the people in the business. I enjoy spending time chit-chatting with our teams. I like being social with our group. And it can be hard sometimes if I'm not intentional to be out in the market. So I've have this color coding system for my calendar. And this is something you and I, as a result of business coaching, worked on, just having a scorecard. Like, was this a good week or a bad week? As the business got healthier and I started to delegate more things to middle management that were not on my plate anymore, I found myself in a new role. I mean, actually being the CEO. Mm-hmm. I was the CEO in terms of like owning some responsibilities and vision and culture, but I was also doing like a lot of COO stuff and some chief sales stuff and some chief operations stuff. And as we started to have the right people sit in those seats and own those roles, I had to learn how to let them lead and give them space to do it. But also like, okay, so if I don't have to check in on those escalations and manage those circumstances all the time, how do I spend my time effectively? And that was one of the things, like, okay, so we need to be meeting with executive contacts at our clients. We need to be talking to vendors and partners, need to be having strategic lunches, breakfasts, coffees, different things, be visible and, be a, not just the internal kind of champion for the brand, but also the external champion for the brand.
Yeah. And you color code that. So you have internal.
Yeah.
Inside the walls, outside the walls. What's that breakdown like? Do you, is it kind of 50-50 or do you have a...
I need to see like 30 to 40% of my time green, 30 to 40% of my time external, or I know I need to make that up next week. You know, I mean, these things ebb and flow, lunches cancel, events, you know, you get back from a vacation or, you know, these, there's more things that need to be done, you know, higher priority things come up. And so you've got to dive in, but I'm looking at a, if I could get a week with 50 or 60, that's great in one realm, but it also means that I was less present with the teams and probably missed some, you know, recurring meetings or different things associated with keeping the team internal healthy. So,
and do you, so from the inside, this is a, you know, you keep making my case here that you're really good at what you're doing. And one of the, as a side note, and I'm making a bit of a cheat sheet here for the listener, you've got to have a person at the bridge who's got an idea about how this works, right? Yeah. That can say, all right, this is it. This is how it's going to go. That owns, first of all, owns the results personally of the whole organization. But has an actual vision for the organization, has a burning, passionate, fundamental or foundational vision. Like that vision is foundational, not a bolt-on vision. A lot of leaders, they bolt the vision on. Their real vision is to make money, or their real vision is to not look like an idiot or to just somehow survive this transition, whatever it is, until they get to the next thing. And if they're a hired gun, a non-owner, then it's professional. Like they have a professional why, and they act like, or they look like they've got a vision, but usually that vision plays second fiddle to their personal selfish ambition or personal drive or whatever that is. And not that that's terribly hateful, it's just not great, you know? And so you have a, you embody this vision, you have a vision, you have a strategy, macro strategy, and then you've taken that and created, functional, measurable, tactile, evidentiary, right? Like you point at like, look what I'm getting done. I think it was Deming that said, if you can't explain what you do with a process, you don't know what you're doing. Like you don't, you're not really sure what you're doing. He also said, in God we trust, all others must bring data. and that's the whole point of a scorecard, is to say, hey, how you doing? You know, are you reaching up and ringing the bell, you know, that is going to bring this result a year from now, 6 months from now? OKRs is a great, piece in that whole picture. And I remember when you got a hold of that OKR business.
Measure What Matters. That's
really important. Yeah, that's the name of the book. That's right. And to have an ultimate goal. What is it? OKR is objectives and key results, I think. Is that what it stands for?
Yep.
So you grabbed onto that really well, and you've got good things in there. And then you do this thing where you turn it into a weekly, you commit to it weekly, you know, and that's the whole point of the scorecard, is have a week that will achieve these OKRs eventually. So, all right, so you came across Jody, and you've been good. You came across Jody because you've got your, you know, line in the water, so to speak.
That's where that came from.
Yeah. Then you talked to Joshua. You relied on some of your key folks, your key opinions. You folded, I'm sure, Scott into the Scotch partner.
Scott and Nate. And,
Nate, your biz dev guy. So we should have Nate on here sometime. I don't think I have sat down with Nate and had a robust conversation about it.
Brand champion. I mean, as much as anyone. So.
And we're going to have Jody in here, and I'm going to pick Jody's brain about particulars on interviewing and how he works the marketplace and sifts and just what does that, quote, biz dev process look like for him. I think that'd be really valuable for our listeners. But all right, so you got your guy Josh involved, and but then you had to make some sort of go, no go. Like, how did you decide that? How did you say to yourself, this is going to be a risk? Because what you're, as I've explained what you do to other clients, and I say, listen, you knuckleheads, you need to invest in a senior person who has at least 50% of their role is to attract four or five people a year, hire four or five. Is that the key number for Jody?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Ish. I mean, just depending upon growth and other, you know, how much. So as we've replaced some people that, you know, were good change outs, it's more about growth now. So it really has to do with, well, where are we growing? Because the team, the inside the walls thing, I mean, you talk about it in every time you see a business that's laying people off or making cuts. It's like usually there's 20% that they were kind of already close to parting ways anyways, whether it's the employer's fault or the employee's fault. You know, it's not necessarily a bad employee. It's probably even more so bad employer, but there was already a bad relationship. So, you know, those things really affect culture. They affect client satisfaction. But yeah, I would say like right now we've got probably three growth opportunity job, you know, seats identified that Jody's working and their future. So we don't have any work not getting done right now because we can't hire, which I do think, I mean, I know personally a small number of businesses. I don't know what the number is. I know X percent of the marketplace, and it seems like most of them are struggling to find people to work. Yeah. And right now we are not, that is not on the weakness or threat analysis on the business that we can't find people that work. So it's always a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge like finding sales and, you know, reducing OPEX, but it's not a strategic issue for us.
Well, it's really smart. What you've done is really smart and it's a great investment, but you came to this place pre-trigger, pre-commitment, where you kind of made the case to your guys. And you're looking at, you know, and Scott, I can picture Scott. Scott's the money man, right? Yep. And, you know, CFO. And he's like, well, where's the juice here? Well, you know, there's a juice worth the squeeze. Like, what is this going to do for us? How are we going to, so we're going to dump out, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars into this key hire. What are we going to get out of it? And a $10 million business, you know, that's a serious investment to spend, you know, six figures on a key person. You don't do that lightly. Well,
no.
Smart $10 million businesses don't do that lightly. So how'd you sell that to Scott?
I sold it hard. I mean, I went for it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I used my sales skill with him to say, this is really important. I mean, I was compelling, I think like that. There was no, like, here's a spreadsheet with the ROI, and it was a, trust me, I've been sitting in this role. I sat in the chief operations role for a time. This is the thing that is causing us to have these issues. You know, like when we have client complaints about support or project delivery, it's not that we don't know what we're supposed to do. It's not that we haven't tried to manage somebody up to that. It's because we need to replace that person. We know it, but it's so difficult to do that. Because not only do you have to onboard, you have to find somebody, you got to onboard them. That usually falls to the manager too. I mean, that's a huge counted cost of hiring somebody, is not only does the manager or HR need to hire the person, but it's a 90-day period at minimum to get somebody onboarded, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about in the IT space, the biggest reason why people are dissatisfied with technology is not because the technology itself doesn't do it, it's because they implemented it wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, this stuff is highly commoditized now. Like all the technology that we sell, there's pluses and minuses for each product, but when you zoom out a couple of clicks and look at the products, very similar.
Yeah.
But a bad partner can make a really good technology a bad experience for a client. Likewise, a great partner can make a par technology a great experience for an account. And onboarding has so much to do with like expectations being set, understanding the tool sets, getting the right conversations with the right strategic people. You know, one of the things that Jody does, a part of his onboarding, is they sit with all the leaders in the business the first couple of weeks. So even if it's, so if it's an engineer, they're going to sit down with Nate and understand how the sales team works directly from Nate. And if it's a salesperson, they're going to sit down with Joshua and understand directly from Joshua how operations works. And they're going to sit down with finance, sit down with Scott, understand how these meetings get scheduled. There's a 90-day plan. And Jody handles scheduling all those meetings. He owns the agenda for all those meetings.
Yeah.
So, and we've learned, you know, how, so I do first day, we all go to lunch, manager, new hire, Jody.
So this is the 90 day, once you've kind of decided.
Once you started.
Okay, got it. Yeah,
so the onboarding is a completely different aspect of what Jody's doing.
Yeah.
That is another reason why small businesses get stuck getting this wrong is that, I mean, and some of these things just start to bubble up as you make the investment, right? You don't know. Like you, you decide you're going to invest in something for a specific reason, and then all these other tertiary things come out of it. And you're like, man, it's the best money we ever spent. So that person understanding, okay, Nate runs sales, that's how that works. Scott runs finance, that's how that works. Brandon sits down, talks about cultural expectations. So we did a whole bunch of conversation about core values. Now we're going to talk about like, what's a day in the life look like around here? We have a lot of cool stuff in our office. We've got this warehouse with a golf simulator, and we've got a bar and a pool table and a great entertainment. What does it look like? Well, you can't be back there at 4 o'clock. You know, unless you're in a client meeting or there's some special thing going on, like you can't be back there middle of the workday. Like be back there on lunch, 5 o'clock, stay all night, have your friends in all weekend. But like, here's what this is going to look like. So the onboarding component, Jody walks a person through that. So going back to the IT project thing, like a lot of employee relationships fail, not just because it was the wrong person in the wrong org, also because they didn't get started right. You know, it just didn't get going right. And it's so hard to go back and fix that once the damage is done, you know? And it basically gets somebody on a trajectory that's kind of aiming at like 2 years, you know, 18 months. Like once the shine wears off, it's like, eh.
Yeah, and it's 18 months of dollars flying out the window, clients fleeing, good people fleeing, right? There's a cost to that 18 months before you finally.
And there's an inherent risk in hiring somebody is that that person is not still working where they were before. So you're already dealing with somebody who's willing to change jobs. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a thing though. Like some people, I think generally speaking, would say, hey, you know, somebody worked place 25 years, 30 years, 40 years. There's something there that's admirable. Maybe doesn't mean it was perfect, but there's a loyalty. There's an aspect of investment. It could be that that person should have left. Maybe they should have. It could be that the employer should have let that person go and they stuck together. It doesn't mean it's perfect, but when you're bringing somebody in, that means some of those things aren't necessarily true. They might be true and they just haven't found the right fit, but you have to take that risk into it. Like, well, they're changing on somebody else, so they're going to be willing to change on me if we don't get it right. So what's going on there?
I love that you're connecting recruiting and onboarding, that those things are bound together. Many times, the second part, if they get the first part dialed in, they get the second part kind of just drifts. You know, if they get good at finding people, or if they get lucky, and we'll take luck, you know, if we get it, but,
sure.
But the second part then will drift. And then there's a third part, which is, you know, constant, you know, you could call that, I've heard it called everboarding, right? Mm-hmm. Which sounds like a torture, like we're waterboarding, right? But where you're constantly onboarding people, where you're constantly sitting there going, hey, how's this going?
Yeah.
You know, how you doing? How are those key, you know, the key focus points for you? And you're setting a stage in that 90 days, which is, you know, the way our first impressions are, the thing we see first is the way it is, you know? And that's why I think it's really, really important early in the recruiting process, before the hire, for sure, that they interact with the key leaders, the CEO especially, to say, oh, wow, you know, you're carrying the fire for this culture, and that person interacts with them, and that sets it in their mind that, okay, this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And also you're showing them through these different, introducing them to different parts of the team or different players on the team and taking it slow. You're showing them that you're serious about this culture.
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, this is a culture where, you know, either in their mind they're saying, I'm going to get found out. You know,
right.
I'm like, I've been faking it all this time, and they're going to figure it out. These guys will figure it out. My past employers didn't. My therapist didn't. My ex-wife didn't. Well, maybe my ex-wife did. But the point is that these guys are going to figure it out, and they're never going to hire me.
Yeah.
You know, and so they'll go, you know, I think I left the oven on, or I think I just realized that it's not you, it's me, or whatever, you know, that breakup thing. But then they're also saying, a good hire is saying, whoa, finally, there is a business that is the, quote, job of my dreams, or boss of my dreams, or team of my dreams, you know? And, and you know, I think that one of the things you're embodying here in your team, knowing your team pretty well, you guys have become the boss that your folks deserve, you know, and that's, I think, the number one problem with most leaders is they don't become the leader that their staff deserves, you know, and now one first doing that, and then going, okay, now let's find some great staff, you know, and things are so rough and tumble out there in the marketplace that it's understandable that folks don't get this figured out, but I love how you have figured it out.
Well, I would say that is in the same way that, you know, that going back to that whole fitness thing, you know, that's all great. And you can do, like, I could have gotten turned 40 and been in good shape, but I mean, it's every day. I mean, it's every week. Like, if you want to be in good shape. So, I mean, it's a high calling to be up to that task. Hmm. Like I have a healthy fear of being fired. Even though I own the business and I'm a majority owner and CEO, you know, I'd be the last person to be gone, you know, in whatever ugly reality, that never happens.
Explain that more, fear of being fired. What would it look like for you to be fired?
I imagine our people and our clients in the room. We have that in our conference room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, imagine these people in the room. Like I am the, in some ways, kind of like the, I'm not elected because I own the business, but in a ways I feel like an elected governing official where, hey, do a good job for us and we'll take care of you. And so hiring, partnerships that we make, decisions we make in HR, decisions we make on comp, I don't sell anything. I mean, we were talking about being in the marketplace, but I don't have a quota. I don't have a ticket board. I'm not responsible for my 40 hours a week like our engineers are. I don't have projects that are assigned to me. I don't actually do the things that our business does, which means I'm a cost as a CEO. So I better go earn that for the business. Like I owe that amount of value to the organization. So leading the leaders well, protecting the culture well, maintaining the correct partnerships externally, having a vision for where we're headed. And this whole thing of onboarding and the idea of like getting it right works backwards from a vision that I have, which is to get a perfect 10 from spouses and friends. So one of the critical things that happens in that last interview is for me to say, hey, what questions do you have for me? Like, ask me anything, because I want them to feel like they're choosing us as much as we're choosing them. And I want them to know I feel that way. I do. Like, everybody that's working at TTX right now has chosen to work there, and we've chosen for them to work with us. We don't own more decision of that. And I think that maybe is a traditional employer-employee thing where it's like, hey, be grateful you got a job and be a servant of the business. Do what you're told to do and we'll take care of you, quote unquote. It's more about, you know, working together works for both of us. You like working here. There's this, I like Chick-fil-A. I don't go there too often, but I like it. And one of the things in the lobby was a quote from, I think, is the founder, Truett Cathy, that says, food is essential to life, therefore make it good. Like, IT is essential to life. Like, we have to do IT in this world. Like, technology is essential for businesses. The people that are working there have chosen that this to be their field. This is an essential. This is how they make a living. So I just look at like, well, let's make it good. You know, make working here good, and to have heirloom quality jobs. That's another one of the visions. So like, if I'm a CEO who's not embodying the core values, then I challenge the vision that I have for the organization, which is for somebody to feel like they have an heirloom quality job. So if I come in and I'm frustrated with something related to my personal life or in my professional life, something inside the boundaries of TTX, like, you know, I owe it to the organization to handle that healthily. And if I don't, then I'm as culpable as anybody for the reason it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, hey, I get judged on a different standard. I mean, when we launched the core values, I said, hey, if the leadership team doesn't embody these values, everybody's going to hate them. They're going to hate the idea of these things, because it's going to be like, that's what we say, but that's not what we do. They're happy to hold us to that standard, but they don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that, like, how do we make life here better? If I do that, then I do feel like other things take care of itself. And in the business that we're in, as a professional services business, what we do for people, the more that we take care of our team, hiring, onboarding, growth and development, the better the client results will be, which takes care of everything, you know?
So you've landed on something I think is a really big deal around recruiting. And that is having a real vision that good people would say, well, doggone, I want to go there. You know, you're going where? You're going to do what? You know, I want to be a part of that. You know, it has to be a win, that ultimate destination, or that, I call it the land of awesome. Has to be compelling. It has to be a compelling vision for everybody, the owners, the clients, the vendors, the advisors, the employees, their spouses, their bankers, you know, whatever. And you blew right by it. And there are two really big deals here. First of all, you're endeavoring to build heirloom quality jobs. And when we worked through this, how long has that been since we worked through this? Like 4 years, 5 years, something like that?
Yeah, four. I'd say maybe four-ish, yeah.
You know, so heirloom quality job means what in your mind?
Something of worth that you would use the same kind of connotation as a treasured thing you'd want to pass with the family. I wish I could move this to my son or daughter. I want it to carry on with my estate. Like, as yeah. as a thing of value.
Yeah, like, imagine hey, don't, the will, right? Don't, reading the will.
Don't sell this.
Yeah, like, and you, Johnny, get my job at yeah. TTX. You know, yeah, you know, that's very cool. I just watched again Knives Out. Have you seen that movie?
Yes,
Knives
I
Out.
Have.
Yeah. yeah, and it's like the will thing yes. and all that, and you know, so yeah,
that's a good movie. I like that.
Yeah,
one.
Imagine that being, and that's how you imagine this, and
that's how we put the code on yeah, it. You know, just yeah, to yeah. make it real. Like nothing. I don't think anything can give me a greater rise in confidence and success than if I were to have a vision of a dad or a mom who works at TTX talking to their son or daughter about how glad they are that yeah. they work at TTX.
That's
like,
great.
That's just the best.
That's great.
And yeah, I'd be willing to give up a lot of financial reward for that to be
yeah.
true.
Yeah. Well, and the beautiful thing is that if that were true, there are a lot of other things that are true.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, I was pitching to a person, same size as your business, just the other day. It was just last week. I think I told you about this person. He's not listening. He should be. But I mentioned your Land of Oz. I was pitching, and my pitch essentially is I do a half day session with the team,
yeah.
you know, and essentially take the first pass at building that ultimate vision. And I used you guys as an example and said, you know, so here's an example of a great vision. Heirloom quality jobs, you know, 5-star reviews or perfect 10 from mm-hmm. our spouses and yep. friends of mm-hmm. staff. And the owner, and this guy owns like 4 companies, and you know, they're probably jointly, I don't know, 20 million, 30 million yep. revenue, you know, not hundreds, but probably 75 employees between them. And he's like, well, I can't do that. How am I going to do that? And his team is sitting there looking at him and he's looking
that's
at
tough.
Me.
That's tough.
And I'm like, well, there's your problem.
Yes, it's being honest, but yeah, it's right know, there. It is on the table. Yeah.
I mean, this is just what I do, like poke at the actual yeah. root. And when you have somebody at the bridge with their hands on the tiller, so to speak, you know, mm-hmm. who's like, I'm just here till I can figure out how to sell this thing.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's no wonder you don't get good folks. And who yeah. wants to work for that kind of punk?
Right.
Right? I mean, you know, good for you and your family banking and mm-hmm. your asset management and stuff like that. But man, there's, you know, this is a quote from Open Range with mm-hmm. Robert Duvall and Kevin Costner. And they're getting ready to go into this big fight, you know, and the lady's like, don't go out there, you might
yeah.
die.
Yeah.
You know, can't remember her name, the actress, but he says, ma'am, there's things that are worse than dying.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, look, there are better things than making a bunch of money. Right?
I believe
that. You know? So you're great at that. And I love that. So you embody this thing. So that's the first one, perfect 10 or heirloom quality job. Second one's perfect 10 from spouses and friends. So explain that for a minute.
I have a lot of, you know, the friends that I have, when we're hanging out, having a beer, sitting around a fire, or, you know, socializing, just text messages, phone calls, checking in, people that, you know, don't work with me or in the industry, you know, usually the conversation floats to, how's work? You know, what's going on with you? Like if it's in the construction industry or legal, whatever, it's, you know, something completely unrelated. And I have found that very few people say, man, work's great. Like, I really like what I'm doing. Like, I like the mission. I like the org. They're taking care of me. And I find the work enriching. Just really glad to have this job. You know, I very few times have I heard somebody say that. Now, some people do. And when I do, I'd capture that. Like, wow, really? Because it stands out. You know, I mean, as an employer and owning a business, I'm always asking people, how's work? Because I have a lot to say about that. So it's a good question for somebody to ask me. And I'm obviously very passionate about it. So what I envision is the inverse of that. That's where that comes from. So what if somebody who works for me is sitting around with their friends at a fire or checking in, saying, "Hey, man, you do IT, right? What TTX, right? That's a business. I saw their, you know, signs at the Guardians. How's that going?" Man, I'll tell you, it's like that scene in the Christmas Carol movies where Ebenezer Scrooge gets a view of what people are saying about him that he didn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's floating through town and people are talking about what a miser he is and how much they hate him. I mean, that's the sense that I get having an opportunity to watch a person that works at TTX talk to their friend personally with no obligation to me. Their manager's not around, you know, no consequence, sitting with a friend. For them to be like, "Oh man, can't stand that place." You know, they did drive me there, or maybe less so, like, "Man, they're driving my nose in the ground. Like, I'm totally buried, like burnout." To see a husband or wife get less quality time with their spouse because of what TTX is asking
spouse
them
rolls
to do.
Their eyes. They're like, "Yeah, here it is, that dump job or whatever." Yeah.
That, I don't want that. You know, like desperately, like I'll do a lot to make sure that doesn't happen. And so the perfect 10 is the opposite of that, which is like, if somebody came to, if let's say, so job, it's a tough market out there. Let's say one of our key employees gets an offer. They're on LinkedIn. Somebody says, "Hey, I see you do account. You're an account executive at TTX. We're looking for account executive. We're paying 30. We'll match any offer plus 30%. Work from home."
Is that a thing? Any offer plus
30?
There. I mean, I might.
What I'm hearing is if you're not doing 10, 15, 20% raises every year, then somebody else is going to pay.
Snag you. Especially in the tech space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I would want the perfect 10 to do is when that, let's say it's a woman that's working for us and she gets this offer on LinkedIn. She sits down with her husband and says, "Hey, I got this offer. Like, you know, I love working at TTX, but I mean, this is significant." And because there's always somebody willing to pay more. And the husband saying, "Are you serious? You love it there. Like, you're so happy. Like, I've never seen you come home from work like that. Like, I remember the job you had before and the one before that. You were miserable. Like, is it really worth 10 grand a year for all the fun you're having? Like, you like this guy and that gal." And like, I'm not trying to trap somebody into staying. I want it to be legitimate. Like, this is good for our household that you work there. Yeah. Like, don't be stupid. Like, these people are just going to pay you more, but they're not going to give you what you have at TTX. I mean, that's what we're shooting for. We've not arrived. Like, this TTX is not perfect. And I'm sure there's spouses and friends and that we need to do work on. Like, but we're trying, you know, like that's what we want. We talk about it.
Yeah.
It's a part of people hearing me say that on a quarterly basis. They hear our teams communicate that. So we're shooting for that. And then I do have fruit of that. Like, I do see those things sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I see pictures and notes and have interactions with spouses at like Christmas party or summer picnic or things like that, where people do say those things, but it's, you know, it's not perfect. We haven't arrived on that front, but we're trying, you know, we're trying really hard to make that true.
So what was one of your folks got married a little while back. Who was that? It was one of your guys, and y'all went to the
several. There's been several. Yeah,
we got that was
some,
cool.
That's some. I love. So
it was like a couple years ago, right?
I really appreciate being invited to weddings, being invited to showers. You know, baby shower, like, or tool shower, or whatever guys do for, like, hey, when a guy get together.
That's a thing.
Yeah, tool shower.
And
you know,
I missed out on that.
And candidly, like, I see it as a responsibility of the CEO of the organization what we're trying to build to be present at funerals and tough times too, like moves. I mean, I'm not trying to make everybody my friend, because that you can cross some boundaries and that's not what people are looking for necessarily either. I mean, they're looking for something that's healthy, and you can go too far where it becomes unhealthy. We are doing more than working together. We're saying that, which means that we're invested in each other's lives at a certain level. And it's not all the little things. Like, we don't need to be going to each our kids' games and doing every single thing that's happening. Right. But like, when there's, hey, my dad died. That's really tough. And to say, hey, let me know when that is. And, you know, I like to support you, not because I'm not trying to like figure out some way that you feel like indebted to me to stay, but like, it matters to me that this matters to you. And, I do think some of that is, you know, it's not necessarily what you want to do, but it's what you should do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're good at holding up that vision of we're trying to build something amazing for really beautiful reasons, yeah. not transactional reasons. And the transactional stuff comes along. It's a fruit, you know, that happens. And you're pounding away on this, these true motivators or drivers, and this is from the book Drive by Daniel Pink. Did you read that? Yeah. We've talked about it over the years. Yeah.
I've read some of it.
And he kind of says and ties this to a number of really broad and multi-generational studies that, and it's kind of a no-brainer, you know, that what drives us or what motivates us is meaning, mastery, and autonomy. You know, mm-hmm. those three really scratch our itch as a human, where we say, okay, I'm all in, and I'm fired up, you know, and if we can, and as managers and leaders, we accidentally squash those three things and we stuff money in there, you know, or mm-hmm. professional, whatever perks, and you know, it's carrot and stick kind of thing. And what you're doing is you're truly investing in, you have a really good why or purpose. You have a really good culture where people can get better and better and better at what they do. And you hold that up and say, hey, let's not be slackers here. Let's be great at what we do. Yeah. And it's satisfying to be, you know, excellence is a worthwhile pursuit just because you get to feel good about yourself,
yeah.
you know, and look at yourself and go, hey, check out what I did. And then autonomy, which is, hey, you own this. These are your results. This is your space. I'm not going to mess with you. I love how you know, as we're talking about Jody here and Joshua. So Joshua on the operations side, you give him a lot of autonomy. You guys interact a lot,
yeah.
Obviously, but it's really clear that he has autonomy, that he owns results. He feels like he owns the results, and you yeah. give him bandwidth and space to own those. And the same thing with Jody. And so those three things are very powerful, and yeah. you've invested in those. You know, you've arranged your organizational theory mm-hmm. around some really smart, healthy
yeah.
strategies. And I think that's, like one of the key roles of the CEO, owner, whoever's got their hand on the steering wheel, however that works kind of legally, but it's their job to keep a firm grasp on the basic macro strategies. Like, who are we? Where are we going? Yeah. Why are we doing this? What is it we do? Mm-hmm. And what does executing look like? You know, what's our basic playbook? And you invest in that. You spend a lot of time thinking about that, and that's partly why when folks hear about you, right, in the marketplace, yeah. in your space, want to work there. So
there's a real thing. We all have standard equipment. I feel like for every person, we have this sense of, is this person the real deal? Like this antenna kind of mm-hmm. for like, is this the real thing? And you know, some people are really good at faking that, you know, and so we get duped, but we still have it. Mm-hmm. Like we're capable of being tricked, but we still have a sense of the real thing or not the real thing. And we can definitely smell the not real thing consistently. So like when something is clearly fake, we know it's fake. When something's trying to be the real thing, sometimes we get tricked. But I think, you know, Jody, when he has that first meeting and it's conversational and it's slowed down and we're talking about who you are and who we are, and Jody's able to say, like, I love working at TTX because he does. Mm-hmm. That person's like, this is a little different mm-hmm. than a job posting and an HR person who is not all of your departments are doing this. Again, I don't have anything against that, but maybe somebody who's just checking boxes. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a job rec. Go fill it. So that person takes the posting and then just says, okay, here are the questions I need to ask you. What Jody's doing is completely different than that. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody can say like, wow, nothing else is different, but I also sense that that person is like really likes DTX. Like, it's not just that we feel this in sales. Like, I mean, I'm the strongest salesperson for the organization when I get involved in those deals, because like, you cut me open and I bleed all this. Mm-hmm. So like, you can't believe it any more than I do.
Yeah.
So somebody, even if they decide our price is wrong or it's not the right mm-hmm. product, they're going to be like, man, that's a product mm-hmm. that
what else have
that
you got?
Guy believes in.
Yeah, I'm buying.
And you know, so Jody believes in it, like that head coach analogy when he's sitting with a player believes in it. Mm. And then they go through the skills conversation. And then when they sit down with me and leader, and then you see like Jody likes me, you know, so the guy that he's talked to a bunch of times, we sit down in the room, Jody and I, hey man, how's the drive up? You know, what's going on? Like, how did your daughter do in the volleyball tournament over the weekend? Joshua and I are laughing about music. We're always talking about music, or we're laughing about a TV show or some movie quote or whatever. Person sitting there is like,
what planet am I on? Right?
You know, yeah. And then, so one of the things that we hired this guy named Brendan. This was a funny thing that came up at lunch. So we hired him, went through the whole process, hired him. He's been with us for a couple of months. So the first day, he starts on a Tuesday. He works for 3 hours and then we go to lunch. Joshua, he's working in operations. He's in the help desk. Joshua, Jody, and me. We sit down at a Mexican
and this
restaurant.
This is a normal thing, right?
It's normal.
For a new hire.
Gets scheduled. As soon as we hire the guy, the lunch gets scheduled. My culture and core values get scheduled. Nate's sales overview gets scheduled. Scott's financial overview. And that carries on. Like, he gets training in ConnectWise database. He gets goes through a university. Like, it's all, there's a 90-day project plan for onboarding. And that just gets layered in.
And Jody owns that.
Jody owns that. Hmm. So he sends the invites out to everybody and like, Brandon, what's going on your calendar for this culture and core values overview with Brendan? So anyways, we're 3 hours in, we sit down to lunch. And you know, like, dude, it's great to have you. We're glad you signed up. Like, we're really excited you're here. And I think this isn't necessarily a set question, but Jody said like, hey, did anything stand out to you? I mean, you're here now. So like, did anything stand out to you that you weren't expecting? And he's like, yeah, it surprised me when I was watching this morning that everybody was like hugging each other. Like, some people hadn't seen each other. You know, we're doing like a flex policy. So people are in 2 days a week. So sometimes it's 2 or 3 days. People haven't seen each other. So walking back in the knock, our operations center, you know, guys are coming in like, hey man, how's it going? How was your weekend? You know, doing like a side hug or whatever and bro hug. And he's like, man, I've never seen that before. And we're like, yeah, it's just the real thing. I mean, like we actually like each other and actually look forward to getting to work. And, you know, some days are better than others, but it was a funny little commentary. Like, we all just kind of sat back and were like, yeah, I guess it is a little different. I had my, I mentioned I had my 40th birthday. And so Scott, my partner, threw a little surprise party in the warehouse. And I'll say that's a little bit of a weird thing. I mean, so it's the CEO's birthday. He's turning 40. So I'm getting a bigger deal than anybody else is getting. Like, we don't have a 40th birthday in the warehouse for everybody. So it's a little bit, for me, it's a little awkward. Like, hey, everybody else in here turned 40. Like, we don't have to make mine a big deal. Like, we're all in this thing together. But I leaned in. Like, it's cool. Scott wanted to surprise me and do it. And there was a cake and balloons and stuff. And I didn't think anything of this part, but afterwards, Buzz, our lead strategic account manager, amazing salesperson, but managing our accounts, said, hey man, did you notice like everybody like basically formed a line to hug you? Like, there was like a line of people, and it wasn't forced. I mean, it was just kind of natural, but like, it was a lunch hour thing and everybody wanted to say happy birthday. And I didn't think anything of it, but it was actually kind of a thing. And what I'm saying in all that is like, the organization trusts me. Hmm. I've given them a vision for something that I believe in, and I have a daily responsibility to actually do that. know, like it isn't like I landed a vision and now it's just the business runs. Like every day I got to like respect people and try hard to hire the right person. And I like that struggle. Like I lean into it, but I could screw it up.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's an effort, right?
Yeah.
You got to do it.
Yes. It's just like fitness where it's like, hey, at my age now, all it takes is like 2 weeks of falling off the wagon, not working out, not eating right, mm-hmm. eating late, mm-hmm. not sleeping, like mm-hmm. 5 pounds comes on quick, mm. get a little bloat, you know, worn down. Like it happens easily, yeah. you know, and that gets worse and worse. But yeah. I mean, we were playing golf in our golf outing and somebody said something to me as we were going by the putting green, like, go get a man, go win it. And there was a bunch of people joking and laughing. And you said, I'm like, man, you're doing a really good job with this business. And I'm like, yeah, today. Mm. I mean, I got to earn that every day. I do feel mm-hmm. that way. And that's the healthy fear of being fired. Like there's a sense of which if I show up tomorrow as a lesser version, then people have a right to lose some love and feeling. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if I show up and I'm like, short with somebody or make a bad partnership decision, the financial ones are the worst, right? Somebody sees you make a bad financial call, like cheap out on somebody or sneak some money from a client, like not pay something back. Maybe they overpay, not pay somebody back, or do something for a money reason. People are like, mm-hmm. just like every other CEO out there. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the,
yeah,
that's the, like, that's when the axe falls for somebody yeah. from a culture standpoint. It right. was like, just like every other one out there, focused on himself and his ends and, you know, wants to have a big house and fancy cars. And so you got to fight against that. But yeah. I think the real deal, like the people have an antenna for the real deal. That's a high calling to be the real thing. And it's hard to do, but yeah. worth it.
Yeah. Well, and I think your staff, your visionaries, if you will, are a testament that you're doing a good job with that. So I've got these kind of non-negotiables, as far as, I've been extracting these and writing them down as you've been saying them. So as far as a recruiting process or recruiting maybe strategy or theory, maybe is a better way to put it,
mm-hmm.
to first of all, to treat talent acquisition as a fundamental, not a bolt-on, not like an add-on or not like a B story or a C story. It's as important as... operational excellence is as important as business development. It's one of the fundamentals of the business, talent acquisition. Another bullet point is keep it simple. Like keep it friendly, keep it simple, keep it human, mm-hmm. kind of what I heard from you. Go slow. That's if you were to put in, like, and these are principles, not prescriptions.
Yeah.
Go slow. Hiring and firing is the best part and the hardest part. So to take it really seriously,
yeah.
both sides. Always hiring so that you can avoid the urgency, so you can have a bench, a deep bench, mm-hmm. as much as you can afford it in the business. Yeah. A lot of times in business, it's tough to have auxiliary folks in the wings because... payroll is a big part of the expense, and it's hard to have a profitable business with a lot of extra people around. But to have some sort of line, and I like that as a part of a strategic vision, is to say, hey, someday we're gonna have a waiting list of clients and staff. Mm-hmm. You know, someday we're gonna build this thing so well that we're gonna tell clients no. And we're going to tell future hires, like, hey, come back next month. You know, we're,
yeah.
you know, wait in line. Level up the inside walls, protect the outside walls. As a visionary, as a CEO, as the key leader, that's one of the things I heard from you, that you have to kind of keep an eye on both sides of the wall.
Yeah.
There's a great, this is from Psalm 23. David, the shepherd, talks about how the rod and the staff,
yeah,
you know, comfort me, you know. And he's talking about the great shepherd, right?
Yeah.
But he's a shepherd, and he's just talking about sort of the shepherd thing. And this is something I've thought about in parenting. We've talked about this over the years, but the rod and the staff, like the rod is like to keep the inside the pasture or keep inside the walls. The rod is a teaching tool. It's a organizational tool. It's like, hey, everybody, this is where we're going and this is how we're going to do it. And the staff is a weapon for the wolf. It's the staff goes outside the wall. You're protecting your folks with the staff and and you don't want to mix those up. Like you don't want to beat up on your people.
Right.
You know, and be just harsh with them and stuff. You want to be harsh with the enemies of your culture, you know, and you got to protect that wall. And all high performing cultures have a high bar of, or a barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. You can't just like click and buy. You can't like put the thing in your shopping cart and just order culture online and pass out some book. I see a lot of CEO types think that they can just kind of the book of the month club. They can literally pass out some books and everything will be better. And like, no, buddy, the problem's you. You know, it's not the clubs in the golf, right? The clubs matter, but only a little bit. You know, what really matters is the guy holding the club.
Yeah. And we had something on that recently where, you know, there's these Land of Awesome things where one is to be always hiring and this kind of like making that investment to where you're not hamstrung by how many people you have or the people that you do have needing to replace them. That's an idea we've been talking about and people are like, man, I don't know if I can get there. And it's like, it takes an investment in time, but it produces a great result. Another one is like, are you willing to actually terminate a relationship within a customer because it's the wrong fit for your organization? Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen anything impact culture so significantly in one thing than when we said, as a leadership team, these clients paying us money. It's not that they don't pay their bills. They are paying us money, but it's not a fit. Like, we don't like the way they talk to our team. We don't like the way that they, you know, the stress that they create for people that are like well-meaning, trying hard. And it's just like, the economy is not there. Like they don't respect us the way we want. So like when you do that kind of thing in front of the company and say like, yeah, we told this customer, thanks for being a client, but it's just not a fit. People are like, whoa, they really believe this stuff. Like they actually think, which is the inside the wall thing where it's like, hey guys, I see this is messing with us in here. I'm gonna go take care of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna go fix that. Like that guy's, that's a wolf.
Yeah.
But we've kind of let the wolf in a little bit, you know, we're like, we're getting this guy out of here. You know, we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. And, but everybody knows like, well, do they really believe that? Like if they really did, maybe they do something about that customer, but that's like really tough for a small business to say,
it is.
Thanks, but no thanks. Like,
revenue,
maybe one of the hardest Land of Awesome, like having a waiting list and actually saying like, hey, you're in somebody else's seat from a customer standpoint.
Yeah. And culture, you know, and you've been good at investing in culture. Culture is one of those things that is invisible. You know, it's hard to pin it down, you know, and there's a lot of great books that talk about how other people have pinned it down, and we've gone through these over the years. And you know, I'm thinking about our very first podcast, 001. You know, you and I talked about the Culture Code book, where he talks about great cultures in that book. I can't remember the author now, but
Daniel Coyne.
That's right. Yeah. And you've figured out, and good leaders figure out how to take that invisible thing and paint a picture of it, you know, and actually turn it into a tangible thing. And that's really what a visionary is. At the end of the day, a visionary sees something that everybody else doesn't see, and they get other people to see it. Like, hey, you see this thing we're going for? No. All right, let me explain it to you. And they go, oh, I see it now. And that's your job as the key leader. And this culture stuff and holding that vision up to attract great people is a major part of your role. And I love how you do that. So I'm going to have Jody come in sometime soon and talk about the specifics around interviewing and talk about the specifics around how he takes some of your leads, because you probably generate some leads for him, quote unquote, on the sales side.
Yep.
And then he's generating some too, right? He's kind of maybe beating the bushes.
He's
if you
doing
will.
More than anybody yeah. else on that yeah. front. Yeah. yeah. Anybody else in the organization.
Yeah. And I want to ask him kind of what it looks like practically and professionally to kind of give something for the listeners who are going like, how the heck do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
To grab onto. So if folks want to get a hold of you, first of all, like you guys crush it on the, delivering your product and service, but somebody out there may be going like, I'm working for the wrong guy. how do they get a hold of you? I mean, they can email me, I suppose.
Yeah,
but
sure.
What's a good way for them to get a hold of TTX?
TTX-inc.com is the website, and there's okay. contact us. But yeah, talk okay. through you probably is the best thing. I mean, yeah. I'd love that. But I mean, I've really just, it's fun for me to flush out what's in my head with you mm-hmm. on this stuff, because it's good to pull it all out, examine it, and put it back in sometimes too. You know, just it's really. When I pull in the parking lot every day and see the cars there, I get really excited.
Mm.
And one of the things that I'm reminded of in talking about this is how important it is to honor the faith that somebody puts in us at the start to turn that into trust. Because our vision is to be the most trusted partner. And it goes with that perfect 10 from spouses and friends. But like when we make promises, in the same way we do in sales, when we make a promise to a new hire, it's our responsibility to make that true. And that is worth doing just because it's worth doing, you know, mm-hmm. just because in and of itself, it gives a lot of life. And so it's been fun to do this. I appreciate the invite. And sometimes it feels like when we're talking, like we've got it all figured out. We don't, we're trying to make all this happen, but
yeah,
we're doing it earnestly, you know, doing it sincerely.
Yeah. Well, there's a cost all the way around. You know, you've not figured it out the first time.
Yeah.
And you've not figured it out the third time. You know, I mean, it's just, there's a learning cost. There's an epiphany cost. There's a growth cost. There's always trade-offs. You know, you could be doing some other stuff besides running this business.
Yeah.
You know, you could, for sure. Having, you know, you have a lot of great little hobbies, as I do. We share some of them.
Fun hobbies are fun.
Yes. But you got a great heart and you got a great mind and you're really good at attracting great folks. You're my favorite client. I think of you as the client, like from a, like John Grisham standpoint or something, like the client, you know? So yeah, I don't take that lightly, but, thanks for being part of this, part of this business of mine. Thanks for letting me be a part of your business. And sometime I want to have you back to talk to the C-suite person and explain to them why they need a coach, how to pick a good advisor.
Yeah.
You know, because that's something that people are kind of bad at. Why to have one, and B, how to pick good advisors. And there's a number of different folks that a robust business leader needs in their kind of book of business, quote unquote. And you seem to be really good at you're great at picking business coaches.
really good nose for that.
Yeah. But you're good at your other advisory spots as well. Finance and legal and whatever. And that's something I've noticed, that just CEO types, owner types just kind of suck at that, generally. And I would love for you to speak to them and say, here's how you do it. So I think it'd be a good future combo. Brandon Kenny, CEO, TTX. Dude, love you. Love talking with you. Proud of you.
It's been fun. Thanks.
That's a wrap.
Toast.